So today we are doing an exercise on Lewis dot structures. And I'd like to start with an example I have done in class already to be able to talk a little bit more about structure. So the example I'd like to do is the nitrate ion. So however you do the Lewis dot structures, in any of the methods, you've got to come up with a total number of valence electrons that are present. And we did things differently than the way it's described in this lab exercise because we draw single bonds to make a molecule and then fill in electrons based on electronegativity. So first, though, let's do the count of electrons. We've got one nitrogen, which since nitrogen's in the fifth main group column, that means it's going to have five valence electrons. We've got three oxygens. Oxygen is next door to nitrogen, so it's got six valence electrons. And then the fact that we have a negative charge. The reason we have a negative charge means that we have an extra electron compared to the number of protons that are around. So that means we're going to add to the total electron count. If we ended up having a positive charge, that means we're missing an electron, which means we've got an extra proton. We would subtract out if we had a positive charge. So since we have a single negative charge, we're going to add one to this count. So 5 plus 18 plus 1 gives us 24 electrons total. And so the way we had done this in class is to first come up with what the essential structure of the molecule is, which in most cases, it's the first atom that's the central atom, and then the other atoms surround it. In this lab exercise, there's a few examples of molecules that don't follow that pattern. So once I do my lecture here, I will tell you which of the molecules in the lab exercise are slightly different. In other words, I'll give you that outline structure. So in this case, though, nitrate does follow that normal pattern. First atom is the center one, three oxygens around it. And so automatically we're going to write single bonds between nitrogen and oxygen. Now, in this case, it's easy to figure out which element is more electronegative, because as you go to the right or you go up on the periodic table, that's how you figure out which element is more electronegative, and oxygen is to the right of nitrogen. And in fact, most cases, most of the examples you're going to see, it tends to be the less electronegative atom that's in the center, the more electronegative atoms that are on the outside. So in this case, if we've already got the three bonds, that means we've already used up six electrons. That means we got 18 more we got to put. Well, each oxygen happens to have the space for six more electrons. So 6 times 3, that gives us the 18 electrons that we need to put around. Now, this would be a complete structure in the sense that we got all the number of electrons around it, but we don't have octets around everything. And so what we do in that case is we take one of the pairs of electrons, move it between two of the atoms to make a double bond. So that way the electrons are shared between both atoms, and that helps to give one of the atoms an octet. One thing I might not have fully described before is, well, how do we know which one of these oxygens we use to move into a double bond? And the answer turns out to be yes. Meaning that we can move any of the lone pairs, any of the oxygens pairs, into being a double bond. And the reason for that is these structures are actually somewhat limited in displaying exactly what the structure of the molecule is. The true answer here is that all of the oxygens end up getting involved in supporting an octet on nitrogen. And it's not truly that the electrons bounce around. It's more the fact that they all simultaneously participate. This is what is known as a delocalized structure. So localized means put in one place. Delocalized means spread around. And so it turns out that the electrons are spread over several atoms. But when we write these bond lines, those bond lines are showing connections only between specific atoms. So there isn't a really good writing system to show this spreading of electrons out. And so what we end up doing is we use a combination of structures. This double-headed arrow I'm writing in shows that these structures are related to each other. And what we'd have to do is take a blend of all three structures to really get an idea of what the molecule looks like. So these are what are known as resonance structures, which, to be honest, I haven't taught from this textbook before, so I haven't looked ahead to see if this topic comes up later in the course. But it comes up in some of the example molecules, even one of the ones we're doing in this lab exercise. And so I wanted to explain what's going on in this situation. How do you know which of these to share? Well, the better answer is they all get shared. It's just we choose to use one or another at a time. So for you all, especially in terms of any future quiz or exam, you're not going to have to worry about coming up with all these possible structures. But I'm just explaining why are there these multiple possibilities. So that's one thing I wanted to talk about. But the other thing I wanted to talk about is the fact that there are individual charges on each atom that we could come up with. And this was something we had skipped over in lecture because it's not something that was really highlighted in your text. But if you do go back and look at some of the example molecules that were in the chapter 4, I can remember one page that I think has carbonate and maybe a couple other molecules drawn out. And in those molecules the text draws, it actually shows where individual charges are located. So this is something that's known as formal charge. And what formal charge is a comparison of how many electrons an atom would have in its unreacted natural elemental state . So it's a comparison between that versus how many it has when part of a molecule. So the way we calculate it is this: the formal charge. We look at the number of valence electrons it's supposed to have based off of its position on the periodic table. And then if it's got any electrons that are lone electrons, like you notice the oxygens all have electrons that are just belong to the oxygen. So we count each one of those as part of that count. So we'll take the number of valence electrons, subtract out the number of lone electrons. And then what about the bonds? Well, we treat all these as truly covalent bonds, meaning that the electrons are shared equally between atoms. So each bond has a pair of electrons. So one electron would count for one atom, one electron would count for the other. So since each atom effectively gets one electron from each bond, we're going to subtract out the number of bonds. This can help to explain why we ended up moving electrons around to make double bonds. Besides the fact that we made an octet, there's something else that's going on here. So if we apply this method to oxygen, if we look at any of the oxygens in any of these structures where it has a single bond and then three pairs of electrons, if we do this calculation of formal charge, we look up how many electrons oxygen's supposed to have, which that's 6, based on where it's located on the periodic table. In this particular oxygen, it's got 6 free electrons all on its own. But it also has an electron it's sharing from the bond. And so if you put that all together, that means effectively oxygen's got an extra electron on it. So it's going to have a negative one charge. And so all of the oxygens on these structures, where it has a single bond, it's going to be a negative one charge, including this very first structure that we drew. Now, if we look at nitrogen in these structures that I called resonance structures, the nitrogen, it's supposed to have five valence electrons. It doesn't have any electrons on its own, but it does have a total of four bonds. A double bond in this case does count twice because it's two pairs of electrons being shared. And that means that the nitrogen in these resonance structures, they're positively charged. Well, if you look at the fact that we have two negatively charged oxygens and one positively charged nitrogen, that all adds up to an overall negative charge, which is what nitrate's supposed to be. But now let's look at the nitrogen in this very first structure that we drew. If we count the number of valence electrons it's supposed to have, five, again, it has no lone electrons, and it only has three bonds. That means it ends up with a plus two charge instead. And so here's some of the logic behind why we moved electrons around. It's because it doesn't make sense that we have negative and positive charge sitting right next to each other, because negative and positive would attract each other. And so part of the reason we move electrons is to reduce this separation of charge. Now you might say, well, you still got a positive and negative charge in these other structures. How come you don't make another double bond? Well, that's because nitrogen is not able to exceed the octet rule. You can only have a total of eight electrons around nitrogen, which in these other structures we've already got. So we did move electrons to try to reduce charge and to make sure everything has octets. But for elements like oxygen and nitrogen, things that are on the first two periods, the first two rows of the periodic table, we can't get to more than eight electrons. So that's why we didn't make yet another double bond. So again, I know this is past what we had done in lecture, but we've got plenty of time today, so I wanted to just tell a little bit more about the story of what's going on with these Lewis dot structures. Once you have this concept of formal charge, it helps to explain why I had drawn the structure of another example molecule the way I had. In class, we had done acetic acid, which is the compound that gives vinegar its taste and its odor. You might recall there's different ways of writing out that formula. And the reason that there are some different ways is because one of the ways helps to show what the structure of the molecule is. So this is one of those cases I'd have to tell you how atoms are arranged, which is that carbon has three hydrogens around it, one of the carbons. That's attached to another carbon that has two oxygens around it. And one of those oxygens has a hydrogen attached. So we should do what we normally do, which is come up with the total number of valence electrons. So we've got two carbons, each one that has four valence electrons. We've got two oxygens, each one that has six. And then we have four hydrogens, each one that'll have one valence electron. So 8 plus 12 is 20, plus 4 is 24 electrons. So first we'll put single bonds between all the appropriate atoms. That's why I had to tell you what the essential structure was, so you know what to connect up with what. And if you count that total number of bonds, we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. That means we've already used up 14 electrons, which means we need to put 10 more. Well, like a lot of normal cases, if we just fill up the oxygens with electrons, that turns out to be exactly 10. And so now we have a structure with the right number of electrons, but just like up above, we have an atom that doesn't have an octet. So in class, once we got to this point, I said, let's take the oxygen that has three lone pairs and let's move one of those lone pairs into sharing with carbon. And at the time, a perfectly fair question would have been, how come we don't use the other oxygen to do that? Well, if we look at formal charge, that helps to answer that question. Because if we look at the formal charge on this structure for carbon, carbon's supposed to have four electrons around it. It doesn't have any lone electrons, but it does have three bonds. So put that all together, and that means we have a plus one charge. If we look at the oxygen that's to the right, it's supposed to have six valence electrons. It has four lone electrons and two bonds. And so that means it's got the number of electrons it's supposed to. It has no charge. But we already saw up above that when we have a singly bonded oxygen, that we're going to end up with a negative one charge. Because it's supposed to have six electrons, which it's got six free electrons, but it's also got a bond. So now we have a positive and negative charge that are right next door to each other. So that's why it makes sense that we use that top oxygen to make the double bond. If we'd use the other oxygen, then when we shared the electrons, we would end up creating another charge. So that's why we didn't use the oxygen on the right-hand side to make that double bond. And it's because the other oxygen already has a charge on it that we had used it to make the double bond. So once we make that double bond, then if we do the formal charge count again, we can see that carbon, since it now has four bonds, it ends up with zero charge. So four valence electrons it's supposed to have, zero lone electrons, four bonds, gives us zero charge. Oxygen, whether it's got two single bonds or one double bond, that will always make oxygen neutral. Because if we do the count, six valence electrons minus four free electrons minus two bonds, that gives us zero charge. So that's why this structure with the double bond is the better way to write the structure. So does anyone have any questions on formal charge, what I've talked about so far? Now again, since we have the time, I wanted to go a little bit into some other types of structures that you're not going to encounter in this exercise. In this exercise, everything is, in fact, neutral. None of these have charges to begin with. And all of these will form structures that have regular octets. But there are some cases of molecules where we won't follow the octet rule. And one of those cases is the molecule boron trifluoride. So BF3, if we wanted to write its structure out, we could count valence electrons. Boron is in the third column of the periodic table, the third main group. Oops. So it'll have three valence electrons. And then we have three fluorines. Fluorine is in that second to last main group column. That's the seventh column over, so seven electrons. So 21 plus 3 again gives us a total of 24 electrons. So if we put single bonds between the boron and the fluorine, this is one of those normal cases, and I didn't write the formula, actually, but where the first atom is the central one. So that takes care of six electrons. We need to put 18 more. Which if we fill up all the fluorines, then that gives us our 18 electrons. Now, based what you'd learned in lecture, if you saw this, you would then say, oh, well, we're missing an octet on boron, so we need to make a double bond. But since we've covered formal charge, let me show you that we won't do that in this case. And there's two reasons for that. If we look at boron, it's supposed to have three valence electrons. It doesn't have any lone electrons, and it's got three bonds. So it ends up with a zero formal charge. Each of the fluorines, it's supposed to have seven valence electrons. It's got six free electrons in one bond. So it ends up with no formal charge. So as written, the molecule already has all the atoms with no charge. So then you could ask, well, why would it want to make double bonds? Because if it did, you would end up with a charge on the atoms. Let's just draw a structure like that so you can see that. So the fluorines that have a single bond, they're still zero formal charge. But if we look at the boron in this version of the molecule, it's now got four bonds around it, which means it's going to end up with a negative one charge. And then fluorine, it's got only four free electrons and two bonds, so it ends up with a positive one charge. So like I said, by moving electrons around, it actually has created a separation of charge. The other thing is, fluorine is the most electronegative element on the periodic table. So it's the one that would want to steal electrons from other things. So it doesn't make any sense to make fluorine positively charged. If anything, it would want to try to become negatively charged. So that's why for this case, the best structure is really this first one, where you don't complete an octet. And that happens with column 2 and column 3 main group elements, like beryllium or boron or aluminum even. And it just has to do with the number of valence electrons they naturally have. Now, compounds like this end up being really, really reactive. They'll react with other things to get pairs of electrons to make up that octet. But when we're writing the structures, in this case, we don't make double bonds. Now, there's the opposite case that happens for something like sulfate. So sulfate, that's one of those polyatomic ions you were supposed to learn. Sulfur and oxygen are both in the same column of the periodic table. So the sulfur is supposed to have six valence electrons. Each oxygen is supposed to have six as well. And then because we have a negative charge, in this case a negative two charge, we're going to add two electrons to the count. So 5 times 6 is 30, plus 2 gives us 32 electrons total. So if we take the outline structure of sulfate, it's going to be four oxygens around that central sulfur. The four single bonds we use to make that take care of 8 of the electrons, and so we've got 24 left. Which, since we can put 6 electrons around each oxygen, that takes care of the 24 electrons. So everything's already got an octet. So based on what you learned in lecture, this is a perfectly fine structure. And it still even is one of the ways of representing sulfate. But since I've gone over formal charge, let's take another look at this molecule. Each of the oxygens has a negative one formal charge. And I think I've had said this already. Anytime oxygen ends up with just one bond and three lone pairs, that will give us a negative one formal charge. Six valence electrons it's supposed to have, six lone electrons that it has, plus it's got a bond. If we look at the sulfur, remember sulfur is in that same column on the periodic table, so it's all supposed to have six valence electrons. It doesn't have any lone electrons, and it only has four bonds, so that means it ends up with a plus two charge. So this is kind of the same situation as nitrate, because we've got this separation of charge going on. And remember that for nitrate, I said there's only so far we can go in moving electrons around, because nitrogen can't have more than an octet. Well, it turns out for sulfur and phosphorus, things that are on the third period, the third row of the periodic table, they are able to violate the octet rule. And it's beyond the level of the course to explain exactly why it occurs. We don't even get into the true reason in the Chem 1 sequence. But it does happen, which means that we can write the structure in this way. We can move two pairs of electrons from different oxygens to make double bonds. The double bonded oxygens will now all have zero formal charge. The single bonded oxygens would still be negative one charge. And since sulfur's got six bonds around it, that would count for six electrons, which is how many sulfur is supposed to have. So now sulfur would have no charge. So this structure violates the octet rule, but as I said, for sulfur, that's allowed. So you might ask, well, which one of these structures are we supposed to write? And the answer is yes. Which, let me explain why I keep saying it in that way. When I was a kid, I remember asking my dad, like, well, are we going to go to the store today or tomorrow? And the answer would be, yeah. Yes. No, but Dad, where are we going to go? Are we going to go today or tomorrow? Sure. Because he heard the question, are we going to go? Yes. Today or tomorrow didn't matter so much. So, are we going today or tomorrow? Yes. Is it a wave or a particle? Yes. That's quantum mechanics. So here, which one of the structures? Yes. Because the real structure of sulfate is a blend of the two of these. This is another one of those cases where all of the oxygens, in fact, participate in sharing electrons with sulfur. There's no good way to write that, so we write it either one of these ways, but we recognize that to get a true concept of what the molecule looks like, we're going to blend these structures. So just to review what we've done this morning, we did a couple of examples of Lewis dot structures, the way that we'd done them in class, but now I've added this extra detail of formal charge. For the quiz that's coming up next, where I am going to put Lewis dot structures on, you're not responsible for learning formal charge. At least not until we get to the point in the text, if the text gets around to mentioning it. So for the moment, you don't have to worry about it. But I wanted to show you the formal charges because it does help to explain a bit how we make the structures. And I've also now talked about exceptions to the octet rule, that we've got things like boron that won't follow the octet rule because it just doesn't have enough electrons. And then there's situations like sulfur and phosphorus that are actually able to exceed an octet. So now what are we going to be doing in terms of this exercise for lab? Well, you've got a set of 10 or 11 molecules that you're supposed to draw the Lewis dot structures for. So you're going to have the time to do that right now, and then at the end, I'll go over the answers. Because this is review, you could say, for the types of problems that would be coming up on the quiz. The only thing extra I would like you to do is to go ahead and calculate formal charge on these structures. Like I said, I'm not likely to hold you responsible for that on the quiz, but the other section got through this very quickly, even with calculating the formal charges. So now let me talk about some of these structures before we start, because some of these do not have a central atom that's immediately obvious. So for the first one, HCl, there's only two atoms involved. So you could call either one of those the central atom. For the fourth one, for ozone, O3 has all the oxygens in a line. Well, it's not necessarily a linear structure. It's just that you have one oxygen connected to the next oxygen connected to the next oxygen. They don't form some kind of triangle structure. You might reasonably think it's a triangle based off of this formula O3. But it's not triangular. It's one oxygen connected to the next, connected to the next. The one right below it, HOCl. OCl is a polyatomic ion that we didn't learn, called the hypochlorite ion. And so this has a hydrogen attached to it. So it goes HOCl. Again, not necessarily linear, but one connected to the next. This is actually bleach, at least in the standard type of chlorine bleach that you'd get at the grocery store. So hypochlorite, or in this case, hypochlorous acid, that's one of the forms of bleach. If you turn to the next page, HCN, very similar. CN is cyanide, and the hydrogen attaches to the carbon. So again, one atom connected to the next. I think that's one example that I'd already done in class. Then some of these others are also a little different in structure. Now, the fourth one down on the second page, CH2Cl2, that first carbon is the central atom, and then all of the other atoms surround it. So it does follow the normal pattern. But the one below it, H2O2, that's hydrogen peroxide, which peroxide is another one of those polyatomic ions that you didn't have to memorize. It's two oxygens connected together. Oops, which I already put that bond in there, but it's two oxygens connected together, and in hydrogen peroxide, you have a hydrogen that goes on either side. The last one in this set, H2CO, that's the molecule formaldehyde, which I don't think they use it anymore, but it used to be used as a preservative for biological samples. I think at some point, though, they decided it was carcinogenic, which is why they probably don't use it much anymore. So in that case, the carbon is the central atom, and then you have the hydrogens and oxygens that surround that carbon. So that'll give you the essential outline for the molecules that aren't obvious. So what I recommend that you do is to work on this now, and then once everybody's done, we'll go over the answers, so you'll already have those answers. You might want to take pictures of your sheets. We don't have the quiz for a little while, though, I think, so I'll get these back to you before the quiz. But if you wanted to study from them, just so because you've got these examples, you might want to take photos of them before you turn them in. I can't force you. I mean, I could, but I'm not going to force you to stay. So if you'd rather work on it later, turn it in at another time, you could. But it would make more sense, since we got plenty of time, for you to do it now so that you could be here when I go over the answers. Anyone have any questions before I turn over, let you work on it on your own? All right, so once you all have finished, then we'll go over the answers. So the first molecule in our exercise was HCl. Each hydrogen has one valence electron, chlorine has seven, so there's a total of eight valence electrons. Which I had forgot to talk about the fact that hydrogen's an exception. Hydrogen, being on the first row of the periodic table, can't have more than two electrons around it. If you can remember electron configurations, they start out with 1s2, then 2s2, and so on and so forth. But that first row can only hold two electrons. So automatically, even if you didn't know what the electronegativities were, then that means that chlorine ends up where you have to put those extra electrons. And once you do that, hydrogen, with its one bond, ends up uncharged. And then the chlorine, with its six lone electrons and one bond, also ends up uncharged. So it's just one bond with the rest of the electrons around the chlorine. And if you've got any questions on any of these as I'm going, stop me, because otherwise, if you all have got the answers, I'm just going to keep on rolling. So next one is SiH4, which is silane. There's four hydrogens, one electron each, and then one silicon that's four electrons. So that's another one that adds up to eight total. This is one that's where the central atom is the first one listed. And as soon as we write out the structure, we're done, because the four bonds give us the eight electrons that we're supposed to have. Now, anywhere in this exercise where we have hydrogen, it's going to turn out that those hydrogens are not charged. Because whenever hydrogen has its normal one bond, that gives it the one electron it's supposed to have. So any of the rest of the hydrogens, I'm automatically going to say, have no formal charge. The silicon, it's supposed to have four electrons, and it's got four bonds, so it also has no charge on it. Next molecule is pH3, which is the molecule phosphine. There's one phosphorus, which is in the same column as nitrogen, so it's got five valence electrons. There are three hydrogens, each for one electron. So yet again, that eight adds up to eight total. Once we put in the three bonds, there are two left electrons left over. And again, they can't go on hydrogen, so they end up going on the phosphorus. All the hydrogens are zero charge. And then if we look at phosphorus, it's supposed to have five valence electrons. It's got two lone electrons and three bonds, so it ends up not charged. The next one is one of the trickier examples in this set. O3, which is ozone. Each oxygen has three electrons, so that's 18 total. If we write out the structure, which were three oxygens, one connected to the next, then we end up only using four electrons, and so there's 14 more that we've got to put. So you might have thought, well, where do I start putting the electrons? Well, for the most part, it doesn't really matter where you started, because at some point, in order to make an octet, you're going to have to make a double bond. So suppose you started on the middle, and you put two electrons there. Now we've got eight, so we've got to put 10 more. So we could put six around one of the oxygens and then four around the other. So just let me double check. 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 18. But we see that means that the oxygen on the right has no octet. So I'm going to go ahead and move a pair of electrons from the center oxygen to be in a double bond. Once you do that, everything's got an octet. Now, it is also equally right to have the double bond on the left and a single bond on the right. In other words, if you flip the structure completely around, this is exactly one of those molecules that has resonance. So two identical structures where you switch everything on the left and the right, both of those would have been correct answers. This is the only molecule, in fact, out of the whole set that does have formal charges on it. So if we look at the oxygen on the left, it's got six free electrons in one bond, so it ends up with a negative one charge. The oxygen in the middle only has two free electrons and three bonds, so it ends up with a positive one charge. And then the oxygen on the right, it's got four free electrons and two bonds, so it ends up with no charge. This is just like nitrate, though, where we can't make a second double bond because oxygen can't have more than an octet. So this is as correct of a structure as we can draw. Moving on to the next one, HOCl. One hydrogen for one electron, one oxygen for six electrons, and one chlorine for 7 electrons. So that adds up to 14 electrons total. The three atoms are in a line. Well, okay, let me go back and make a comment. Oxygen, I said that they're in a line, meaning one connected to the next. But in ozone's case, with that center oxygen having a lone pair, its true geometry is going to be bent. And that's going to be true of this next molecule as well. Because with the two bonds we've written, we've taken care of 4 of the electrons. We got 10 more to put. And we can get there by filling up both the oxygen and the chlorine. That means in terms of shape, this is also going to be a bent molecule because we have lone pairs on the central atom. Hydrogen, no formal charge. The oxygen, because it's got 4 free electrons and 2 bonds, also has no formal charge. And chlorine, anytime chlorine is singly bonded, that means it's going to have 6 free electrons and 1 bond, which means it also has no formal charge. And in fact, just to say it, none of the rest of the molecules in this exercise end up with formal charges on any of the atoms. Moving on to the next one, HCN. 1 hydrogen for 1 electron, 1 carbon for 4 electrons, 1 nitrogen for 5 electrons. So that adds up to 10 electrons total. If we write the atoms in a row and connect them, we can use up 4 of the electrons. Nitrogen's on the right of carbon, so that means nitrogen's the more electronegative element, so it's going to have the remaining 6 electrons, at least at first. But we end up in a situation where we have no octet on carbon. So what we can do is we can move 2 of the pairs of electrons into being in a triple bond. And once we do that, we know oxygen's already got its 0 formal charge. Carbon has 4 bonds, because the triple bond counts for 3, and that means it has no formal charge. And nitrogen, with its 2 lone electrons and triple bond, also ends up with no formal charge. Next is carbon dioxide. So we have 1 carbon for 4 electrons plus 2 oxygens for 6 electrons each. So that adds up to a total of 16 electrons. Carbon's in the center, oxygens surround it. So the 2 bonds make up 4 electrons, which give us 12 more. And we can get to that by filling up the oxygens. We're missing a octet around carbon. And if you looked at formal charge, it makes more sense to move 1 pair of electrons from each oxygen to make double bonds on either side. Now, you can draw a structure where you have a triple bond and a single bond, but it doesn't really make much sense in terms of formal charge. If you do it this way, where you make it symmetric, where you make both sides double bonds, then the oxygen with its 4 lone electrons and 2 bonds ends up no formal charge, and carbon with its 4 bonds ends up no formal charge. PCl3. The phosphorus gives us 5 valence electrons, and each chlorine gives us 7. So that's 21 plus 5, which gives us 26 total. So phosphorus is in the center. That uses 6 electrons up, so we got 20 left. We can put 6 around each chlorine. That gets us to 18, so we need 2 more, which there's still place on phosphorus for that, and so we put the last 2 on phosphorus. So phosphorus, it's supposed to have 5 valence electrons. It's got 2 free electrons and 3 bonds, so no formal charge. And then each chlorine, as I had set up above, chlorine, anytime it has just a single bond, is going to have no formal charge. Just a few more here. We've got CH2Cl2. So carbon has 4 valence electrons, each hydrogen 1, each chlorine 7. So 4 plus 2 is 6, plus 14 is 20. Hydrogen can't have any more than 2 electrons, so the only place we can put more electrons after we make all the bonds is on chlorine, which, since we used up 8 electrons for the bonds, there's 12 left over that'll exactly fill up the chlorines. So hydrogen with 1 bond is no formal charge. Chlorine with 1 bond is no formal charge. And carbon with its 4 bonds gives us no formal charge. Now, it didn't... Yes? No, I was just about to comment on that. You could write the hydrogen and chlorine in any position in any order, because this is just a 2D representation of the molecule. In real life, it's a 3-dimensional structure, and there's actually only one way to create the structure. So on flat paper, it can be drawn different ways, but any of them are equally correct. So last two... We've got hydrogen peroxide. So each hydrogen gives us 1 electron. Each oxygen gives us 6. So that gives us 14 electrons total. When we create all the single bonds, we use up 6. So we've got 8 more, which means we can exactly fill up the oxygens. Oxygen with 2 bonds has no formal charge. Hydrogen with 1 bond has no formal charge. The actual shape of the molecule would look more like this, because each oxygen would be similar to the oxygen in water, where you have a bent structure. So from the perspective of each oxygen individually, the structure is going to be bent. Then the last one of these molecules is... H2CO, formaldehyde. Each hydrogen has 1 electron, the carbon has 4 electrons, and then the oxygen has 6. So add that all up, we get 12 electrons. And when we draw the structure out, we use up 6 of the electrons just in making single bonds. Now, you could draw this in a triangular shape like I have, because it is going to end up being trigonal planar, because it has 3 bonds around the center and no lone electrons. You could also draw it in more of a square style. It's not really so important where the atoms are located. So I'm choosing to write it more triangular, though, because that's the way it really does exist. We got 6 more electrons we can put, and so they'd go around oxygen. We're missing an octet, so we're going to move a pair of electrons into being a double bond. And that gives us a complete structure. Hydrogens with 1 bond, automatically 0 formal charge. We've already seen that oxygen with 2 bonds is no formal charge. And we've already seen that carbon with 4 bonds is no formal charge. Does anyone have any questions on these examples? All right, so we're done with the exercise for today.